Welcome back to HealthLink On Air, produced each week by Upstate Medical University and University Hospital. Linda Cohen along with you. Healthcare needs in this country are in the midst of change, and our healthcare delivery systems must be able to meet these changing needs. With the baby boomers and their legions entering senior status, with infant mortality decreasing and life expectancy increasing, diseases like Alzheimer's and other chronic diseases of aging are now taking the center stage in place of devastating infectious diseases like tuberculosis and polio. Plus, breakthroughs in medical technology have extended life and improved life quality. Surgical procedures like organ transplants and joint replacements, once rare and risky, are now safe and routine. And with the promise of genomic-based or personalized medicine comes more hope for longer and healthier lives. But the fact that 30% of the United States is not simply overweight but obese, leading to increases in diabetes, heart disease, and high blood pressure, that could actually wipe out some of these gains in longevity. Our children may not live as long as we do. Healthcare today can do more, but is also faced with some even greater challenges, the foremost of which is how to accomplish delivering quality care while controlling skyrocketing cost. That was the focus of the historic healthcare reform bill passed earlier this year. But will it work? And what do our healthcare delivery systems need to do to achieve this goal? Well, we are most fortunate to have with us this morning an esteemed expert in healthcare delivery. With a distinguished career in the field of cardiac and thoracic surgery, he is now the president and chief executive officer of the world-renowned Cleveland Clinic. Dr. Toby Cosgrove is here to share some of his expertise with the upstate medical community, and he has been gracious enough to join us on air this morning. Welcome, Dr. Cosgrove.
Thank you for having me.
Well, you've seen a lot of changes in healthcare these days, a lot of new demands. Can you tell us about some of the major ones that you see? How are demographics affecting it, for example?
I think we're seeing enormous changes going on in healthcare across the country. We're seeing changes in demographics, changes in therapies, changes in care providers, changes in facilities, and changes in the economics. We are in a state of total re-evaluation of how we deliver healthcare, and it's a great opportunity to begin to improve what we can do for the health of citizens all over the United States.
I think the biggest question anyone would ask at this point is, given all of the needs and the changing needs, how do we control costs and maintain quality? I mean, that's what you're all about. So
right.
What are some of the things you found that work for you?
Well, what we really need to do is we need to improve the value for the healthcare dollar. That means improving quality at the same time that you reduce costs. Now, a great way to do that, just for a small example, is reduce the number of infections. If you don't have infections and, say, surgical wounds, that is better quality, and it also reduces the cost. So there's lots of ways to do this. And we really need to do to take major costs down are two things. One, we have to reduce the burden of disease. If you figure that smoking, sedentary lifestyle, and obesity account for 10% of the healthcare costs in the United States right now, and the obesity epidemic is expanding across the United States and expected to account for 20% of the healthcare costs in 10 years, we will never be able to get the costs under control. So we need to begin to address those issues.
Well, I think they have been, I think everywhere you see, I know the president, the first lady, for example, has been trying to deal with childhood obesity. Clearly, that's the next generation that's coming up. So it's been attempted, but do you think it's realistic that we'll be able to get a handle on this?
Well, you can't do anything unless you try.
Right.
And so we put major steps. Let's talk about a healthcare delivery system and what really is health. We need to change the way healthcare systems are thought about, and that is looking after diseases in people to keep people from getting disease.
So it's basically preventive medicine.
Exactly. And, you know, it's a lot cheaper to stop somebody from smoking than it is to look after cancer of the lung. And so one of the things we've done is we've stopped hiring smokers at the Cleveland Clinic.
Wow. It's quite a profound step, I think.
Yeah, but I mean, it's a model for the society. What we're saying is this is what a healthy community should be about. And what happened when we did that and we stepped out into the community and put on a big smoking cessation campaign for the community, the incidence of smoking in Cuyahoga County, where we're from, went from 28% to 18% over a 10-year period, over a 5-year period of time.
Now, that's quite significant.
So you can make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And so then the next thing we stepped out is let's look at obesity. So we did two things. We looked at the food we served, and we looked at the exercise. We took the trans fats out of all our food. We took the fryers out of the cafeteria. We put a calorie count on the portions in the cafeterias. We took the sugar drinks out of all our vending machines. You can't find a Snickers bar at the Cleveland Clinic. It's really tough.
Oh, my goodness.
One of my biggest give-ups.
I could think so, yeah.
And then we began to look at the exercise aspect of it. We offered free Weight Watchers, free curves, free access to our gyms, and free yoga to all of our employees. We've lost 160,000 pounds as an organization.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
That's a start.
That's staggering. That's more than a start.
Yeah, it's a good start. Mm. But, I mean, we've got 40,000 employees. Then we rolled it out into the community. So we teamed up with YMCA and Curves and the Cleveland Clinic, and we offered free exercise. We had 25,000 people in Cleveland sign up for this. And so there's a pent-up demand for people to try and get healthy. And you can make a difference in the society. We've seen it in smoking. We've seen it in weight. And so we, as a healthcare organization, have got to step up. The second way we're going to control cost is going to be come together as a system. Hospitals have to collaborate with hospitals, and doctors have to collaborate with hospitals.
So it's more teamwork these days than it is. I think the solo practitioner can be like viewed as almost a dinosaur.
Yeah, and you know, the reason for that's interesting. The reason, I think the main reason for that is the explosion in knowledge. Do you know that the total amount of knowledge doubles every 2.5 years? So, you know, there's nobody who possibly can stay on top of everything there is in healthcare because of the huge amount of knowledge. So you need a team. And teamwork is not a natural act for doctors. I mean, we used to be taught that you got to be able to do it all. We can't do it all. We have to have a team. And we can't do it all the time, all day, every day.
I noticed that you instituted something very interesting, though, in terms of your institutes.
Yes.
And tell us about that. You have institutes that are around patient needs versus doctor competencies.
Right, exactly. Well, the way hospitals have been organized for years is in around professional groups. Departments of medicine, departments of surgery. And I recognized fairly early on when I went to the Cleveland Clinic that I was sharing a waiting room with a cardiologist. And on one side were the cardiac surgeons, on the other side were the cardiologists. I had everything in common with a cardiologist.
Makes sense.
But I was in the Department of Surgery with gynecologists and urologists and neurosurgeons, et cetera, and I had nothing in common with them. So we said, why don't we do a novel thing? Why don't we organize hospitals around patients' needs? Wow, now that's a scary thought, rather than around doctors. And so what we did is we said, let's take the neurologist, the psychiatrist, and the neurosurgeon and put them all together in the Neurologic Institute. And so if you've got a headache, you know, who are you going to call? Well, you may need a psychiatrist, you may need a neurologist, you may need a neurosurgeon. They're all there.
I think here, at Upstate, we're starting our new cancer center and utilizing some of that concept, kind of a multidisciplinary approach based on what the patient needs and the disease entity.
Exactly. That's the idea. Organize it around patients' needs.
But how do we do things, for example, in today's world with so many opportunities for care? And people living longer and wanting to live longer, mm-hmm. obviously. How do you capitate? How do you control the demand for more testing and more care and all the money that's spent in the last few weeks of life very often? How do you control for that?
Well, I think there's two parts to that question. Let's take the last few weeks of life and end-of-life care. The unfortunate thing is that patients don't come with a sign that says, I'm just about to die. And so you don't know. But what you can have is a physician-to-patient discussion, and I've had more of these than I'd like to remember, that says, you know, I will do everything I can if I think that I can return you to a productive member of society. And if it gets to the point where I don't think that's going to happen, then we'll stop and we'll talk about it. That comes as enormous relief to families and to patients. So you can have those discussions. And the more you get used to them, the easier they are, and they're very appreciated. So I think that we as an organization, as a group of physicians and healthcare providers, have got to be willing to open up those sort of discussions and have those tough discussions. So now the other thing is, if we're going to talk about how we limit the amount of care that we give, we got to figure out that people are driven by their incentives. And so we've got the incentive basis pretty wrong, I think, in the United States.
It's almost a perverse incentive these days, it seems to me.
In a way. I mean, insurance companies are incented to make money. Mm-hmm. Doctors are incented to do more. Patients are not incented to take care of themselves. So we have to change those incentives. So doctors, and that's how we are at the Cleveland Clinic. So we are salaried. It doesn't make any difference whether how much we do. So there's no incentive for doing more procedures or getting more tests. Result of that is interesting that we were one of the lowest cost providers in the United States.
Hence why you were a model, I think, for the new health care reform bill, amongst other things.
We really want to thank President Obama for using us as a model.
Yeah. Well, I think you're worthy of that, though. I mean, very worthy of it. it seems to me that you've been doing a lot to make changes, but one of the overriding issues right now is the fact that there is a shortage of doctors, and in the future it's looking quite bleak, and similarly a shortage of nurses.
Right.
How do you deal with that?
Well, interesting. We're going to have a shortage of 125,000 doctors across the United States by 2025. We have never produced enough doctors in the United States to look after our needs. We've always been a net importer of doctors. They've come here from all over the world. It's getting harder and harder to get doctors to come here now, and I expect that shortage is going to be even more severe. So what we are going to have to do is we're going to have to find a new way to deliver care and new people to do it. So I think the mid-level providers, the PAs, are going to take a lot of the responsibility that are currently done by doctors. We have a long tradition of that at the Cleveland Clinic. We have 80 PAs in cardiac surgery alone, which do all kinds of things to help us do the cardiac surgery. We do 4,000 procedures a year.
Oh my goodness!
which is the largest in the country, and so that help allows surgeons to do it. I mean, I would do 20 a week, 25 a week, and I had tremendous armies of help. And that's something I learned in the service in Vietnam, when we had very few doctors and very few nurses and a lot of corpsmen. It really helped. Then on the nurse shortage, we're going to have 1 million nurses shortage across the United States. And that is going to have to be, again, the people expected to give the care is going to have to change. We're going to have to see technicians coming into play. For example, in the operating room, currently 40% of the nursing labor is provided by techs, not by nurses.
Well, that's quite significant.
And so you don't have to have somebody with a bachelor's degree to hand you a hemostat. And so we need to categorize the jobs by the people who are capable to do them and train them.
It seems like there is so much to do, but it sounds like you really are well on your way. And we're so happy that you've come to share your knowledge with us today. Dr. Toby Cosgrove, President, Chief Executive Officer of the world-renowned Cleveland Clinic. Your wisdom and your insights have really been very helpful to us today and inspiring. We've got to take a short break. Please stay with us. I'm Linda Cohen, and this is HealthLink on Air 570 WSYR.